This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Big news from our friends at Zen Sports about the big game. The big game sweepstakes is underway. And it is exclusive to Tennessee, where one customer will win a grand prize of two VIP tickets, tailgates, parties, and hotel stay to Super Bowl 59 in New Orleans. It's a prize value over $21,000, or you could win $10,000 cash. Also, Zen Sports is also going to award 50 additional prizes, which include tickets to any two tickets to any Tennessee sporting event or $100 cash. Customers earn one entry for every bet made this month, one entry for every dollar bet in November, and two times the entries for every parlay made as well. The drawing will take place on December the 3rd. Also, if you sign up with Zen Sports using my promo code, that's JeffTN, J-E-F-F-T-N, you'll receive a 25% odds boost when you sign up using the referral code. Start betting with Zen Sports. Download the app today. Zen Sports, betting just got better. For problem gambling support, of course, as always, call 1-800-889-9789. Coming up next segment, we're going to talk with Jason Smith. Before we do that, let's get into the list. Yeah, the Memphis Grizzlies. As we just spoke about with Eric, Grizzlies fall last night, 128-123. The Lakers remain undefeated at home this season. They are the final Western Conference team to remain unbeaten at home. And Cobb, we haven't really mentioned it amongst ourselves, but what did you kind of make of last night? Because there is always the reality of if you stay up to watch the game and then it doesn't go your way, you're like, God, I should have just gone to bed. I will say this. There was a moment in the third quarter where I thought to myself, damn, they're going to win the game. And I get it. It didn't play out that way. I just kind of look at it in these terms of, I know there's coaching decisions that the online community and Grizz Twitter really want to get into, and that's fine. I just look at it as, I don't think you're going to win many games if the Lakers hit 23s.
Yeah, so the defense wasn't great, especially early. But look, when the Grizzlies beat the Lakers last week, they did it at home. They had Ja Morant. The Lakers did not have Anthony Davis.
Yep.
Now, last night, you're on the road. Anthony Davis is playing. Ja Morant is not playing. And you still push that team to the brink. You had to have LeBron at his absolute best again for the Lakers to win that game at home against a hobbled Grizzlies team. So, yeah, you'd rather have the win than the loss. But there's nothing about that game that makes you discouraged in any way about the direction of the Grizzlies. In fact, you know, we haven't had a chance to talk about it, but what we saw from them in Portland was one of the best Grizzlies performances in the regular season that I can remember.
Yeah, that was an absolute clowning.
Yeah, so I'm still in a really good position, you know, with these Grizzlies. I think they're on a great trajectory. How about this? You get Marcus Smart back last night,
and it worked.
He's making threes, you know. So that was nice to see.
Mark sent me a picture. So I guess maybe either Gannett or the AP had warm-up pictures, and Marcus is wearing like one of those I don't know if it's one of those back. Have you seen these things that they wear? It's like a heating pad or something like
yeah.
Like,
Valanciunas always has one.
Yeah,
of them
so
on.
Yeah. So he had that on, and Mark goes, "Is he trying to pull in the gut?" And I'm like, "We're like 1 week away from like Marcus wearing Spanx."
I actually thought he looked a little better last night.
He's playing himself into shape.
A little bit trimmer. A little bit trimmer.
He's playing himself into shape. But, I mean, that's the other thing. It's like, I'm trying to decide, like, do we overvalue how much guys, like, I feel like maybe we put too much stock into guy played well if he just makes shots. Like, last night, it's like, oh, Marcus played well, but it's like, well, he made some threes. It's like,
right,
Huff was bad.
He goes 0-for-2, if he's not hitting those shots, we're looking at his night in a totally different light.
Yeah, but he did.
Yeah, right, but it was interesting down the stretch to see him, you know, them managing the offense-defense situations, right, because you got Marcus Smart, a defensive plus, but probably an offensive minus, and then you got Kennard, who's an offensive plus, a defensive minus, and then you can't account for the fact that Dalton Knecht just went nuclear, right? Like, when he had that terrible game in Memphis last week, it was like, you know, to listen to some people, you know, you might have thought he'd already be out of the league by now because of how terrible he was in that first game against the Grizzlies, and, you know, it's like some people take any chance they can get to take a dump on somebody who wore orange, right, because it's a good way to score points with, like, you know, it's just low-hanging fruit. And then all of a sudden, oh, wait, we shouldn't judge rookies based on a one-game sample size? You mean to tell me that Dalton Knecht, who was the SEC Player of the Year, is actually capable of making shots? Wow, right? So, you know, I mean, that's who he showed himself to be in the preseason. He showed glimpses of that early in the season. And, yeah, he had a couple of bad nights over the last week, but, you know, he was the difference in the game. The problem with the Lakers, though, is that they're going to need a Dalton Knecht, a rookie, to like be something for them almost every night if they really want to have a chance to make any noise in the Western Conference. And the Grizzlies, as Eric laid out so well, and as we've discussed, the depth is on another level. Otherwise, if it wasn't, the Grizzlies would be sitting here at 3-9 right now, and they're 7-5, having navigated a large part of this early season without some of their best players.
I think the other thing, because I agree with you on Knecht, as awesome as LeBron was, like, LeBron was awesome last week, and the Grizzlies won by 17. Like, I really thought Knecht was the difference in the game. Like, to me, that third quarter when I felt like the Grizzlies kind of had him maybe like a standing eight count, if you will, he just hit so many threes that kept them in it and kept the game from, like, really getting under control from the Grizzlies. Like, I felt like he was the big difference. But I wanted to get your perspective on this because you're a little bit more Zach Edey skeptical. I don't even know if skeptical, but like you don't quite have the gene. You're not a hater, but you're not all in like some of us are. I quietly think he's kind of turning the corner. His last three games have been pretty good.
He was good last night for sure. How about this though? The Grizzlies are 6-1 when Zach Edey scores 10 or fewer. And they are 2-4 when he scores more than 10. So it's like the more Edey you get, the less wins you're getting. I'm kind of cherry picking here a little bit, but I got more.
Yeah, I got stats for you too.
Hey,
since the Milwaukee game, he's never had a negative plus minus. And the Grizzlies are what, 5-2? Yeah, 5-2 in that stretch. Let's go. Let's have a Zach Edey stat off.
Well, 3-1 when he plays fewer than 15 minutes, 4-4, so only .500 when he plays more than 15 minutes. So
hold on, let me cherry pick my boy DeMichael stat from last night.
Oh no, you got to come up with your own. I brought my own ammo to this fight.
I'm just saying, if there's information out there, are you really going to deprive the people of information? Are you not a journalist? Is that not what we do? Okay, Zach Edey, this from DeMichael last night. Memphis was getting destroyed on the glass until Edey came in. He was plus 12 in his first 13 minutes. Also finished at plus 12.
I thought Anthony Davis was highly annoyed by Zach Edey.
I totally agree.
You love to see it.
Yeah,
you love to see it.
That was the other thing I think that was frustrating about last night. It's like, not only do you stay up, you're like, man, I hate the Lakers. Like, I don't feel like I've gotten like this really lathered up since. The Warriors, obviously, anytime Draymond's on the floor, like, as I've always stated, I don't sports hate Draymond. I hate Draymond as a human being. I think he's a crappy person that just gets so many free passes, and it drives me insane. So the Warriors are up there. But I've never really had, like, the I truly hate the Lakers gene, but there's something about him now. I'm just like, man, F them. Like, I just want to win this game.
Well, even though the Grizzlies lost, the entertainment factor for me was high.
Yeah, it was a good watch.
The Lakers were good. And then you had the T. Morant thing where he's like play fighting with Anthony Davis, which is like funny and weird because like Ja wasn't even playing. And then also, did you notice how annoyed J.J. Redick was with the TV interview coming out of the third quarter going
so
into the fourth? He looked like angry about the fact that he had to do that interview.
I watched with my guys. I didn't watch the ESPN broadcast. So last night, even though it was an ESPN game, it wasn't the exclusive. And I don't know. It's tomorrow night. I know tomorrow night's ESPN, but I don't know. I know when the Grizzlies play the Mavs in the game that got flexed in, that's going to be exclusive on the national broadcast. But weirdly, I don't think ESPN has as many exclusive games as TNT does.
Yeah, I prefer Pete and Brevin, but my whole League Pass situation is such to where like I just... Yo, I don't really get to choose. I just watch whatever. Like, for instance, I had the Portland broadcast the other night, which was hilarious. One, like, total pros. Like, I thought they were fantastic.
Most of, like, there's a ton of overlap between our broadcast people and Portland's. Like, a lot of
makes sense.
Like, Eric's from there. Don Pior was from there. I think Pete is from there. Like, when I say from there, I'm not saying from Portland. Like, they've been part of, like, that system.
You can tell that like it's a highly refined, like the analysis great, the play-by-play was great, but man, they were dogging Portland, and rightfully so, you know, for how poor of a showing that was against the Grizzlies. It was so fascinating. I kind of enjoy getting the other side of it, because I prefer Pete and Brevin, but when League Pass makes me watch the other team's broadcast, I love hearing what they have to say about the Grizzlies, because they're like, well, Jake LaRavia, you know, who's this guy, right? And, you know, and they get so mad because the Grizzlies just have these guys coming out of the woodwork who they haven't even heard of, who they clearly, you know, weren't ready to comment on. And it's fantastic when those guys are giving them the opposing team the work like that.
So I'm with you. I actually find that situation more fascinating. I can't stand when we kind of do the inferiority complex, and it's like when we're in the national broadcast, like, I want to hear what they have to say. Say something nice about us. Say something nice. Like, I don't care about what somebody flies in and says, like, at all. I think the guys that do it every night, I think they're better prepared. Like, even if you compared to the national guys, like, it's like they just focus on what they do. Like, these guys travel. They talk to a lot more people. I find that scenario that you're talking about, listening to another opposing team's broadcast, more interesting than hearing what the ESPN team has to say. With that being said, I do like Dave Pasch, and Dave was on last night.
Yeah, he was on. Tim Legler was on. Legler was like, well, you might have been surprised by that Jay Huff reverse dunk, but I've watched enough film on these Grizzlies.
I like Legler,
that's just
too.
What he does.
I like Legler. Legler's big film guy. Legler is,
yeah, you could tell. Yeah.
Legler's the NBA version of Baldy, Brian Baldinger. Like, he's big tape guy.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, you lose the game, entertaining game, could have won it. The only thing that we haven't really gotten to that I think is important to highlight is the Jaren usage situation down the stretch, where he comes off the floor with five fouls late in the game. Lakers immediately go on a game deciding run. I mean, that run that they went on without Jaren on the floor decided the game. And the natural reaction, and I'm not saying he should be immune to it, is to criticize Taylor Jenkins for taking your best player off the floor with the game on the line down the stretch. All right, like, fair. Let's have that discussion. No problem with that whatsoever. But my problem is not so much with Taylor as it is with the fact that Jaren in year 7 continues to pick up immature, unnecessary fouls throughout the game. And if you don't do that last night, then you are on the court down the stretch. And we're not blaming your coach for why you weren't. But when you commit a turnover and you thought you got fouled, and then you take an unnecessary swipe at the ball in the backcourt early in the second quarter and you pick up a foul, maybe it doesn't seem like a big deal in the moment. But then down the stretch, when you are your best team's player right now and you can't be on the floor because you got frustrated and committed a silly foul early in the first half, like, that ends up costing you. And so, like, Jaren is phenomenal. He was awesome last night. He's one of the best players in the league, right? Like, no doubt. But, like, dude, cut out some of the unnecessary and immature fouling and you would be even better. And that's just kind of a constant issue that I think he's had throughout his career.
I'm with you, because it almost feels like, and someone should track this, I feel like 75% of his fouls are the exact situation that you're talking about. It's related to usually the previous play, whether it be on offense that he gets stripped, whether it be he didn't get the call that he wanted. Like, I feel like it's always something frustrates him, and he immediately picks up a foul like that. Because the other thing that was interesting about last night was, I think he got through the first quarter with no fouls. And then, obviously, the game kind of was going the way that it was, and I get that it's frustrating. And then, all of a sudden, boom, he has three. And it's just like, man, especially on a night where you know there's no job, there's no Dez. Dude.
Yes.
Like,
got to have you on the floor.
And he was really good last night, because I'm with you. I also think that, I think it's a lot like whether or not fourth down decisions for coaches. It's like when you have something obvious, or timeouts for coaches, it's like when there's something obvious that you can point to, I think putting guys in with foul trouble or how you deploy their minutes in the fourth quarter, it gets highlighted, because I don't feel like Taylor Jenkins ever gets any credit for having the team ready to play, because that game, they could have gotten absolutely punked. I mean, Eric was not lying. We were both texting last night thinking, like, he's like, dude, it's bad in here. Like, he's like, dude. And, you know, the fact that, like, they kind of largely stayed in it with their second group, and then people wanted to, like, say, well, that the second group, like, they got torched in that run. It's like, guys, they're not even in the game if it's not for that group. That group in the second quarter was awesome. And in the third quarter, they were largely responsible for taking the lead. And I just kind of think it's like, whenever, like, you're not going to get credit for having your team ready to go into a close game, because eventually if you come up short, and really, I don't think it was the minutes Jaren played. I think in the end, it's like they made 23s. Like, the Lakers, who are one of the poorest three-point teams in the entire league, if they make 23s, I'm willing to bet their winning percentage is probably close to 90, if not higher.
Yeah, no doubt. And also, the starting lineup last night for the Grizzlies was a little unorthodox, because you had Scottie Pippen Jr., Jalen Wells, and then you had Santi, Jaren, and Jay Huff. So you had, realistically, three real front court players there, because Santi could play the four. Jaren could easily play the five. Jay Huff is a five. So, like, you have a lot of heft out there. And I think they really struggled in that first quarter to close out on shooters. Then all of a sudden, LA gets in a rhythm. They're feeling themselves. And, you know, they continue to shoot the ball well throughout the game. So that was, you were kind of at the mercy of the hand you were dealt from a personnel standpoint there. So I thought that starting lineup was kind of maybe one that I don't necessarily want to see again.
I'm glad you brought this up, because I'm when you asked Eric, I was like, oh, that's a good question. I do think, in the end, they're better off with Edie. I think we're back to where we started, but I don't disagree with what they did. I do think Zach needed, like, sometimes, you know, like when they say you're in a shooting slump, like, sometimes just get to the free throw line. Like, see something go in, you know, get an easy make. Like, I do think taking him out of the starting lineup, taking him out of all the pressure that comes with it, and allowing him to kind of come along with that second group, and then mixing him in with the starters, I don't think it's a coincidence that we're starting to see him play better, because I think he was starting to build some confidence, and it's almost like keep rolling with this, and then it is his spot, because I still think they're at their best if he's good enough because of what he presents from the rebounding perspective. Like,
yeah,
you could see last night, like, even if he wasn't quote-unquote getting all the boards, he was, like, clearing the lane out so that either guards could get the boards. Jaren got a couple extra. It's like he was doing, like, it was Steven Adams-like. Like, you know what I mean? He was just clearing out the lane.
And that's the beauty of what he can bring you. And they went with him to start the second half.
Yeah.
So he was with the first unit coming out of the locker room, which I thought was a really good adjustment. Like, obviously, he had made a tremendous impact on that game. He really kind of took Anthony Davis out of the game to a certain extent.
Yeah,
because
hated
AD
to
was
see
so
it too. You know,
flustered,
I know you did.
And annoyed by the fact that there was somebody out there on the floor capable of physically bruising with him. And I thought it was pretty great that Zach Edey recovered, because early on when he checked in, Anthony Davis swatted him. Right. And then right back down the floor, Edie swatted him back. And then they were just sort of off to the races, battling it out from there. And so I like Zach Edie's competitiveness. You go back to that Portland game, he's sized up again with Donovan Clingan, rematch of the national title game. They have some really good back and forths, like, you know, chippy, but not nothing like outrageous. And then, you know, they're both making plays. And, like, he's got a competitive element to him that I don't think you always see with bigs.
Totally
because
agree.
Because sometimes, you know,
he's got a mean streak.
I'm big. I'm kind of athletic. I'm playing basketball, right? And that's always been a pet peeve of mine. at all levels of the sport. And that's not Zach Edey. Like, he is a competitor. He wants to win every time down the floor. And I think you're seeing that. And I think that helps him overcome some of the whatever shortcomings he might have. And that's one of those sort of intangible factors that you're not going to see on an NBA draft scouting report. But I think it's a part of why he is going to be a successful NBA player.
I'm with you, because a lot of times with guys of his size, it's like, oh, they just play basketball because they're tall. Like, it's not necessarily they like the game. I do think he likes the game. He's got like an edge to him that brings a lot. But the other thing I was thinking about last night, so as I was mentioning the three-point thing, I went back and looked. If the Lakers make more than 15 threes, so 16 or more in the last two seasons, they're 13-0. Like, so there's certainly an element of that. But there's this other thing that you were mentioning that I'm kind of down with. I almost think we need to get back to, weirdly with, and maybe, I think this is more of a, I'm going to be very clear. I think this is more of an online problem than it is a people in the group chat problem. Like your actual buddies that are, you know, you're all sitting down watching the game. Can we not get back to the good old fashioned, let's stop blaming the coach. Let's start blaming the refs. You know what I mean? What happened to that? Like, what happened to like we should have some Utah in us. Like, blame the refs when you lose a big game. Like, let's get back to like, I don't like blaming the coaching staff for everything, because it's like, they also have more information than we do.
Bro, that is totally a For You Twitter page problem,
yeah.
Jeffrey.
Yeah.
You got to mute the haters, get on the following page. But it's a great point. Like, Taylor Jenkins gets a lot of flack from the fan base. It seems like maybe a little bit of a disproportionate amount of the flack from the fan base. And I don't really know why. I mean, he's not the most engaging coach, right? And
yeah.
So you don't really feel like you know him that well. And so I think that kind of makes him an easy scapegoat a little bit, because, you know, like with Lionel Hollins, like, I don't know, it felt like you knew him. It felt like he was almost a part of that core four, whereas this seems like more of a player-led sort of time in franchise history.
Yes.
I don't know.
I think it's a couple of things.
But just kind of thinking about, you know, why that might be.
I think, honestly, one of the reasons is he didn't play. Like, you know, there's that weird element. And by the way,
that is true. Yeah, when he got hired, I was on the beat. In fact, I was on the golf course when he got hired. And literally on the 16th hole, got a, you know, Shams breaks it or whatever it is, right? So I bust out the laptop, didn't get to play the last two holes. And then subsequently did a story on Taylor Jenkins being, at the time that he was hired, and I don't know if it's still true now, but when he was hired, the only head coach in the NBA at the time who didn't at least play some level of college basketball.
Right.
It certainly didn't play in the NBA like a lot of coaches have. And, you know, every other coach at the time that he was hired had played at least Division III level college basketball. And he was the lone exception to that.
So, yes, he just went to Penn.
I mean, that's a good point.
I think there's an element of that. I also don't care about that. Like, if being a great player meant you were, like, there's way more examples of great players not being great coaches or great front office people than there are of them. Like, for every Jerry West, there's a billion coaches, like Ted Williams.
Well, the game has changed so much in basketball over the last 10 years. So you look at a Chauncey Billups at Portland, the NBA that he played in is not the NBA he's coaching in.
No.
They are different sports now from a shot selection standpoint, primarily. I mean, you know, the lessons that he learned about how to play are almost unapplicable to the modern NBA because of how differently it's officiated, because of how differently everything is approached from an analytics standpoint. So if he's going to be a successful NBA coach, he almost has to relearn the game. And that could be really difficult to do. And so it has definitely opened the door for more of the math nerds to kind of get their foot in the door.
I do also think, the other thing with Taylor is, if you look at, he kind of has the element of, his regular season is always better than his postseason. And the year that he gets the postseason series win, it's against the Timberwolves. And that was a fun, good series. But it's not like, at the time, like, it wasn't as big of like as knocking off the Warriors or knocking off the Thunder. Like, it, so it does, he doesn't have like the big wins that the fans care about. Like, it turns out that Timberwolves team, like, that was a pretty damn good series win. But it's like,
man,
you're not getting credit for it.
Like, yeah, it's not an iconic moment in franchise history, maybe. And we don't have that yet. And that's That's absolutely a fair criticism. I'll say this, though. Watch the Grizzlies, if you're a skeptic, watch the Grizzlies, the way they move the ball on offense, and then go watch any other team in the league, maybe other than the Celtics, and tell me that the Grizzlies are not one of the absolute premier offensive teams in the NBA, because what they're doing right now with the way they move the ball, the quality of the shots that they get, is far and away above what you see from most other teams in the league. A lot of other teams in the league, it's you get late into the shot clock, it's ISO, fall away twos, you know, whatever. The Grizzlies get a good look on a outsized majority of their possessions. And I think a lot of that needs to be credited to the coaching staff because, you know, and look, how much of that is the new guys that they brought onto the staff and the system they brought in, right? Like, yeah. You know, it might be partially the front office as well, but Taylor seems to have a pretty good handle on it.
Yeah, I also think I just think that there's ingrained in the NBA culture. It's like, it's just you never blame players and it's always blame the coach. And I'm not saying that sometimes I think there are examples where it goes too far the other way. Like, particularly in college football, oftentimes I think coaches get blamed. Like, there are certain coaches that I think are kind of impervious to blame. Lincoln Riley to me has always been in this category where it's like, he's a genius. I'm like, guys, his teams are incredibly flawed. He's had great jobs and his teams are flawed, but we kind of, in the NBA, it's the opposite. It's like, we're always just immediately going to blame the coach.
Yeah. Think about JB Bickerstaff. Yeah. I mean, that guy's been kicked to the curb so many times now. Now, Kenny Atkinson, the Cavaliers are undefeated.
Kenny Atkinson is a perfect example. Like, there was a mutiny to get him out of there when he was with the Nets.
Right. They're easy scapegoat because you can get rid of them for a lot less money than you could get rid of a star player. It's a lot more complicated to get rid of players than it is to get rid of a coach in the NBA. So you can get rid of the coach pretty easily. Whereas if you want to get rid of the players, it's going to be a lot more complicated. You got to have matching salaries and, you got to worry about the bird rights. And, with coaches, you just kick them to the curb.
How much money's he got left? All right, we'll owe him that. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about some of this with Jason Smith. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM. Yes.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts. It's
better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This holiday, BMW has reunited 3 members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
ESPN. Jason Smith is the co-host of the Jason and John Show weekdays right here from 11 until 2. Although this week, not the co-host, the solo host of Jason and John. You can follow him on Twitter on X at JasonSmith929. Jason, do you feel like Taylor Jenkins takes too much heat? Do you think he's appropriately criticized, or do you maybe not hear it? Where are you on Taylor Jenkins' heat?
I kind of tune out on the game-to-game basis. Now, if there's something big enough, like, you know, and when he put Jaren back in last night after you've, what, a one-point deficit has gone to six, you know, I last night I'm screaming at the television, hey, when are you going to put it back in? Cobb makes a good point, though. You know, at some point it's got to be on Jaren not to have five at that point. But still, there are game-to-game things, whether it's the rotation, whether he's putting when he's putting his stars back in, you could get caught up in. But the reason I don't on, you know, just regularly and sort of abstain from any, you know, I don't know, a judgment of Taylor during the regular season. Because ultimately, for this franchise, where you're going to find out about him and whether he can get this thing up to the next level is in the playoffs. And you mentioned it. Right now, sure, what were you, second or third in Coach of the Year a couple of years ago? You know, you've had this team in the number two spot in a couple of regular seasons. But there's only one playoff series win. And for, I mean, the last time out, you frankly got punked and put in your place by the team you were playing last night. And so, obviously, a step back when you add to last season. So, anyway, my point is, ultimately, whether, you know, Taylor Jenkins is the guy to get this thing over the hump or not, you know, whether he's sort of the Mark Jackson or the Doug Collins, and then somebody else comes in, I think we find that out come playoff time. Because I'd go back to what Cobb said. I have a hard time criticizing him on the whole. When you look at what the Grizzlies haven't had for most of this season, which is their big three together, I think that's been for one game. And the fact that they are the seventh-ranked offense right now in terms of efficiency, they're up to number five defensively. But what I'm more impressed with is what Cobb was talking about. Offensively, this team is now back to, what, leading the league in points in the paint. You're, I think, the third-best offensive rebounding team, which obviously is helping your efficiency offensively. And then we've seen this new wrinkle where there is more movement. There is more cutting. And I'm with Cobb. For the most part, this team is getting great shots on a nightly basis. And the issue has been, well, can Jalen Wells knock them down every time because instead of Vince Williams? You know what I mean? And for the most part, I mean, my gosh, you look at Sam Vecenie's article today. Jeffrey, you were talking about it with Jeff. You know, he's got Jalen Wells and Zach Edey as the 1-2 rookies in the league. Jalen Wells has, you know, Jake LaRavia has played well in a spot where, in a season where you imagined he was going to come into the year outside of the rotation. And so to be where they are, even with the loss last night, I've been impressed, and I think you have to give some of that credit to Taylor Jenkins for, on most nights, yes, having them ready to play. Now, would have been nice, I made this point on our show, because you were in position, you had the lead in the third quarter, would have been nice to sort of replace, you know, a couple of those baffling losses to the Nets or the Bulls with a win maybe in a spot that nobody expects you to last night, be the first team to win at Crypto. But overall, I come away encouraged by what this team is getting done, as shorthanded as it is, and more importantly, with guys like Vince Williams Jr., we hope back Friday. You know, you just got Marcus Smart back. Hopefully this Ja thing isn't going to last too long. Bane maybe right around the corner. So, you know, so hopeful, Jeffrey, that maybe you can get enough pieces back that this year in the NBA Cup, you know, I don't know whether you can, you know, get off to a good start against a red-hot team in Golden State tomorrow night, but it'd be nice to be a part of this thing and actually, you know.
Hey, it'd be nice to win a game.
When you don't have a win at all, and it certainly wasn't on our plate to talk about last year other than the Lakers making it such a big deal. I mean, we could only talk about everybody else. It would be nice to be a part of that. And from an offensive standpoint, from what you're doing defensively, you'd think you can, especially if you can get some of these guys back, you know, during, you know, before, you know, maybe before Denver. We'll see how good Vince is. But right now, man, I have a hard time being overly critical of Taylor Jenkins on a game-to-game basis.
Has anything that you've seen through 12 games now changed your perception based on whatever you thought preseason? Have you seen anything that has changed your opinion of what the ceiling is for the Grizzlies this year?
Well, I think the depth overall, Cobb, we didn't know they'd go this deep. Like the fact that you've got Jalen Wells in a place where, you know, he can contribute right now in year one, that surprised the heck out of a lot of us. Jay Huff, too, not last night, but for the most part, to be as effective as he's been. That, to me, has been a surprise, although I've got to hand it to my boy John Martin. I do every time I talk about Jay Huff. When they signed him, he said, and I'm sitting there worried about, man, do they have a veteran presence behind Zach Edey? This thing's like a lot of pressure on a rookie to put him in that, you know, in this spot and say, hey, you hold up and you're the key to everything working. John said Jay Huff's going to be all right, and he certainly has been. So I think, if anything, I'm probably – more encouraged because this deep team is deeper than I thought it would go. I think that's been proven because guys, again, that were not going to be in the rotation have stepped up for you. And, you know, you're hopeful from what you saw last year that at some point when you've got Vince and Gigi back, you're really going to be rolling. And so when you add that, man, to how efficient they've been, I think that's been a surprise as well. I mean, I think they're fifth in net rating. And the only, you know, the teams that are, you know, up top, those are the Clevelands and OKCs, right now the Golden State. So you're doing something right, as shorthanded as you are. We continue to see progression while the role has changed. He's gone from starter to bench player. From Zach Edey, I think, you know, yeah, there's, in terms of production, it's been up and down. But I think there's a progression in terms of his confidence level. You guys talked about it. He wasn't going to let Anthony Davis punk him last night. And I think, that, you know, from symbolically, that is how the Lakers, even with the loss here, you know, they didn't have Rui, they didn't have Anthony Davis. But, you know, coming off that playoff victory over the Grizzlies, where, you know, Dylan Brooks pokes the bear, you pokes this young team that has felt like it's arrived but really hadn't done anything back in its place. I think sort of the way the Lakers have looked at the Grizzlies is, we can punk them. Those young guys do a lot of talking, but when it's go time, we can, you know, we can put them back in their place. And so back to the Edey point, I think seeing him do what he did last night, you know, it's taken Jaren Jackson, and Cobb, you would know this, it has taken him, because you watched it so closely, it's taken him a while to get as confident as he is now when it comes to attacking Anthony Davis. And last night, he was going at Anthony to the point that a couple times he's going to the basket and Anthony's like crumbling up because he doesn't want to get hit. But that is sort of the reckless abandon with which Jaren was attacking him at some point. That's taken time for him to get to that point, because obviously there's a reverence there. And AD's, as you know, he's as good a defensive player sometimes as he is offensively. He probably doesn't get enough credit there. But back to the point, there Zach Edey is last night. First game, you know, really, you know, I guess second, first game against him. AD didn't play in the first one. And he's pushing back. And he's saying, no, you're not going to get this shot against me. But also, oh, here's this hook. And you know, getting more confident in terms of what he can do in this league. And in this case, against a superstar. And there is no question that Zach Edey had Anthony Davis frustrated, probably because it was, hey, Rook, get back in your place. And Zach Edey wouldn't do that. And I just think in terms of a culture, right, that Taylor Jenkins is trying to build here and has to some extent already, that's what you want, because you don't want to be the team anymore that teams look at and say, oh, they're still young and they haven't done anything. They still think too much of themselves. We can push them around. Now, here is Zach Edey on day one, you know, pushing back, and he's done that against the Valanciunases and just about Klingons, just about everybody else. And that's – I've been encouraged, Scott, to go back to your question with just how well he has performed so far, how well he's holding up, how he seems to be adjusting to the speed of the game. He's still getting attacked and pick and pops. But, again, the best way to get through that and adjust is to have to go against it. And he did last night. And for the most part, after a slow start, he got back into it. I know late they were attacking him. But I'm excited now about the future of Zach Edey and sort of how he fits. And when you look at all the numbers, the way the Grizzlies are rebounding again, he's certainly been a big part of that. So right now, it feels like we're back in it, perhaps. We'd hope to jump back in and say, oh, contenders, and maybe it's as good as 1-4 seed, but it really does feel like this is, you know, this depth, and back to something you said, Cobb, sort of the quality of shots they're getting, I think it bodes well for the rest of the season, especially as you get these reinforcements back.
All right, let's talk about the other basketball team in town, or one of the other basketball teams in town. Did it surprise you to hear Penny yesterday say, still thinking about adding to the roster?
No. Because Penny's always going to be thinking about it. And here's the thing is that
he wakes up thinking about who can I add.
They're clearly, and he made the point, they're watching to see who jumps in the transfer portal. Like, I mean, and that's something that obviously Stansberry would have been doing for him, and they're still doing with Stansberry now on the staff. I mean, so, you know, what I wondered is, does he already have his eye on somebody? Is there, how close do you have to be now to other rosters, right, before, you know, to know these types of things? And so, no, it doesn't surprise me at all that Penny would still be thinking about adding, because I'm sure you hear things from other assistants, from other programs about what might shake loose, who's available. You've been checking it all year, but you never know, I mean, with these situations. So, didn't surprise me at all. I will say, and it's almost been by default because you've had guys like Tyreek Smith up and leave right before the season starts, but this shorter rotation, and maybe not default's the word, but almost by necessity, I should say, has been good so far. Now, again, let's be real, your schedule is about to turn way up. You know, save for after Ohio, they're off to a 1-2 start, and I think of disappointed here a little bit as the MAC preseason favorite, but it's really about to turn up. So whether you can, you know, continue to have these super efficient, high scoring 50-point second halves like they've continued to do, that's up for debate. But no, it doesn't surprise me. Penny would be looking to add. My guess is you're not going to get anybody near the quality of a Naquan Tomlin last year. And so my question would be, even if he's got his eyes on somebody, after what you went through last year, and I'm not saying Naquan comes in and he's the reason for the way things broke down. He couldn't have been, because, again, he's so productive. But Jordan's role was different afterwards. And clearly they had chemistry issues after Caleb Mills is pulled. And so Penny has to be asking himself, if he's got his eye on someone, is it going to be worth it? Or do I have enough here? Is a shorter rotation actually good for me this year? Now, I just wonder what kind of quality of player is going to be out there to add. But, no, it didn't surprise me talking about it. I think most important thing for Memphis right now is the fact that you're going to have Tyrese Hunter and P.J. Haggerty, you know, who are banged up apparently, having gone for bits of practice this week. You're going to have them both out there against a Ohio team that, listen, you put them on the schedule, say, hey, this is probably going to be an NCAA tournament team as the MAC champ. Well, they just lost to Illinois State, and I think James Madison's the other one. 1-2 starts dropped down to, I don't know, 161 somewhere, where they were, you know, higher 100s and maybe a team that was going to get top 100. So this has turned into what I feel like, certainly being at home, what needs to be a 3-0 start, a must-win game for you. You can't afford to be losing to this Ohio team that's already got, you know, two pretty shabby losses, I'd say, on the resume. But still, we expect, but come MAC time, we'll be hopefully a conference champion NCAA tournament team.
Yeah, so I'm glad you brought up the fact that maybe it's good for Memphis that their rotation is automatically sort of pared down by the lack of depth. 100%. Because how many times over the last few years have we criticized Penny Hardaway because, well, you know, it's late December and he's still playing 11 guys. He can't get the rotations nailed down. I realize you're walking a fine line if you don't have enough depth. But in some ways, like having your rotation set for you by the necessity or the circumstances of your roster, Jason, I actually kind of think that's a good thing. Because
especially for Penny.
No choice.
GM Penny creates a lot of problems for Coach Penny.
It's not unlike, now he's not playing as few as he did Kendrick Davis's season, but it's not unlike that season, Cobb, and this, and that you knew who your top guys were, and Kendrick and DeAndre, and everybody else just fell in line. And so more importantly, in terms of the guys you're playing, they knew what their roles were, Cobb, and sort of identifying and sticking with roles has been an issue, yes, for Penny Hardaway over all 6 years, but that was the year where it's worked out the best, because everybody knew we got to get behind Kendrick, and you had DeAndre. Everyone knew and respected what he was, and whether it was the Elijah McCaddens or all the other role players on that team, they fell behind, but more importantly, they knew their role. And so back to the, you know, everybody wrote about this at halftime of the Missouri game, but at halftime of that game when they're down, Tyrese Hunter is saying, PJ, he's looking at a sophomore. Tyrese has been through to the NCAA tournament. He's made some runs. He's saying, PJ, you got to lead us. You got to get to the bucket. See, that's the kind of organic sort of pecking order, you know, figuring out of it that you needed. And so I think from that standpoint, yes, having fewer so that guys have clearly defined roles and they know what they're going to be from start to finish, much like it was 2 years ago on Penny's best team, a one that should have made the Sweet 16, if not for that loss to Florida Atlantic, which you could argue they had possession of the ball. So my point is, yes, this feels like closer to 2 years ago where you're going to have a team that knows its roles because out of necessity, Penny's playing fewer guys.
Jason, we really appreciate it, buddy.
Y'all take care.
That is Jason Smith doing a great job hosting Jason and John solo this week. When we come back, let's tell your story. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. If you haven't had a chance to go read Tim Kwan's piece on Aaron Rodgers over at ESPN, I highly recommend you do it, especially if you're someone that enjoys watching Jets misery. But we've identified the reasoning and the main primary culprit for why the Jets have struggled, even with Rodgers this year. Cobb, you're fighting against some of the ghost of years past, Rodgers said as he referenced the ghost, that he sent a quick glance towards the wall on the right as the massive photo banners of every member of the team's Ring of Honor. So it's the ghost of the past, and it's the former great players. That's why the Jets are not good. They're fighting against ghosts. Spooky ghosts.
I honestly thought you were going to go somewhere where like Aaron Rodgers actually believes in ghosts and believes that real ghosts are haunting the Jets.
I mean, if you read that headline, you're not like, no way, right? You know what I mean? Like, you're like, that sounds about right.
With some of the off-season medicinal drugs that he's used, I'm sure he's seen some ghosts.
Well, and then also, remember when he quit on the darkness retreat? I remember that, too. That was the darkness retreat was an all-timer. All right, buddy, we appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you, man. It was a blast.
That, of course, is David Cobb. For George, for David, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.